Hello and welcome to the Mind Your Fitness podcast. It is hosted by me, Thomas Fowler. I will be interviewing a wide variety of guests. We will look to cover health, fitness, mindset, mental health. We'll keep it lighthearted and we'll try to understand the stigma that we still see around mental health and how we can look to break it. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to it, and don't forget to throw it on your Instagram, show some love. And with that in mind, let's get on to today's show.
So, I'm good.
So, actually, that probably goes really nicely as an introduction.
Good starting point.
Yeah, so who are you? What do you do? Why are you holding two crystals?
So I'm Beck, a witch, a healer.
Yes.
Let's just get the witchman out of the way straight away.
Definitely.
And yeah, I've just picked up two crystals because I'm nervous.
Yeah.
And anxious. Rose quartz and amethyst, just to help sort of calm my nerves a little bit.
Okay, so for those who don't know what a witch is, what crystals are.
Okay, yeah.
What
is a modern day witch?
Yeah, what's it all about?
It's just a way of life, really. So I class myself as Wiccan, so I follow Wiccan faith. I use spells, crystals, I'm a Reiki healer, sage, incense, different teas, essential oils and everything,
yeah.
Just to help me get through every day rather than turn into other things that people might turn to.
Yeah.
Bit more natural.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Yeah.
And how long have you been Wiccan?
Probably now the year before we went into lockdown, so what was it, 2018, 19? Around that time. I think probably 2018 was a bit of a turning point. That's when I started to sort of look into this sort of way of life.
Yeah.
And then I went on and trained as a Reiki healer, and that just sort of spiraled from there then.
Yeah.
And it just sort of
fit into
my life.
Yeah,
and it worked, and here we are.
So what was that turning point?
Definitely at the time I was being sort of palmed off by doctors left, right and centre. There's nothing wrong with you. Even though they knew something was wrong with me,
yeah.
They weren't believing that it had got as bad as what it had got. And it was just turning to something that helped.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't getting the help from my doctor that I should have been getting.
Yeah, okay.
And if I had got that help, then I might not be in.
So where you are now,
yeah.
So what was it that pulled you into this way of life rather than, so like I just said a minute ago, you could have gone a completely different way. Was there a person that spoke to you, like you resonated more? Was there an event? Like, what was it that ultimately made you go
this way
rather than the other?
When I was working in a salon, I met a lady who, she was a Reiki healer, and she spoke to me about Reiki, and I knew of it, but I wasn't sure what it was, and I just loved her sort of way of life. I don't think she was a witch. I never really asked the question. It's not a question you ask someone, really. But I loved her sort of way of life and how she lived. And she was just so calm and peaceful. And it was her that actually got me into Reiki.
Yeah.
I never had Reiki off her, but she just sort of opened the door for me. And it was that sort of then spiraled it. I mean, I knew when I started doing beauty therapy that I wanted to do holistic therapy more than beauty,
yeah.
But it was a bit of an access to get to where I needed to be with like massage and things like that. So
yeah.
There were a few things that sort of happened that led me to choosing that way of life. And then throughout lockdown as well, I did a course on herbalism just to sort of pass the days away.
Yeah.
And that was another major turning point because I just started to realise that there's all these different herbs that are literally growing in our gardens that can really help us, and people
yeah.
don't even know that they're there. Like dandelions and things like that. Like, people look at dandelions like they're weeds, but they're actually really good.
Well, whenever anyone says dandelions to me, I just think weed a bit.
Yeah.
So, yes. Like, what can a dandelion do, for example?
Dandelions are good for, I mean, I'm not should like, don't go, like, picking dandelions out your garden and eating them. Make sure you see a trained herbalist. But you can make, like, a tea out of their roots, and they're really good for, like, settling your stomach and easing constipation and things like that. So,
yeah, I never knew that.
Yeah. And obviously peppermint as well. Mint grows in most people's garden.
Yeah.
You've got
yeah.
peppermint tea. Unfortunately, it's not homegrown peppermint, but come back in a few weeks and it might be when the mint's grown. When the mint's grown. But yeah, mint's really good for similar symptoms as well. So it was just a few things that sort of got me to where I am now, I suppose.
Yeah.
And obviously my health played a massive part in that as well. So...
So how comfortable are you talking about the health aspect?
Yeah, really, really comfortable, yeah.
Okay,
ask
cool.
away, whatever.
So, obviously I know a little bit
yeah,
about what's
yeah.
going on, but this is your opportunity to tell whoever wants to listen a little bit about you, your journey,
yeah.
and ultimately what your purpose is with having...
Yeah.
conditions that you have, yeah, and then sort of what's your plan going forward?
Yeah, okay. So I was diagnosed with endometriosis back in, oh god, I don't know the dates. I'm gonna pluck one out of the air. I think it was about 2015.
Oh wow, so
yeah, it's been a little
almost
while.
Almost 10 years,
it's
nearly.
2015. It might have been 2014. It was a long time ago, anyway. But I'd struggled for. Years previous to that. In fact, I was 14 when I first was admitted into hospital with suspected appendicitis, because it gets misdiagnosed all the time. And it was a doctor then that actually mentioned endometriosis to me, but he actually said, you'll be fine, like you'll have bad periods, but you'll be absolutely fine. And I was 14 and my mum was with me, but she didn't know any better.
Yeah.
You trust what you're being told by the doctors, and that was that. We took it as I'll have bad periods like every month, but
yeah.
I'll be okay. But it just got worse and worse and worse, and obviously I know now that that's what happens with endometriosis anyway, when it's not controlled. But I was back and forth to the doctors from like age 14 up until I was diagnosed then in 2014 2015, and they just kept palming it off. And then eventually I got a referral, and they'd done a laparoscopy and diagnosed endometriosis, but what they didn't do was get me to sign a waiver before I went in to say that if they find any, they can remove it. And because that wasn't explained to me, they left it in there. Then when I came round, they sort of said, yeah, you've got endometriosis, but we couldn't do anything about it because
there was no
paperwork.
Yeah.
And we were very frustrated, as you would be, and I asked for another operation. It doesn't work like that though, apparently. They've got to let things settle down and whatever. And the doctor who done the operation actually said to me, you know, you'll be fine, like you can have children, we're not concerned about your fertility. And that was all I really wanted to know. And then I had a follow-up a couple of months later with another doctor, and he sort of gave me the results a little bit clearer, and he just said, it's not quite as simple as, you know, you can have children. He said, at the moment you can, but your best chance is now. Like, we don't know how quickly this disease is going to progress. I should probably say what endometriosis is, shouldn't I? I'm sat here talking like everyone knows what it is. And so just a quick side note, what endometriosis is, it's cells that are similar to the ones found in the uterus are... migrate elsewhere around the body. We don't really know why. There's no real cause. Some people think it's hereditary, but there's no sort of like
proof.
And what happens is every month when you have a period, those cells, they build up, then they break down and bleed, but there's no way for that blood to leave the body, so it basically then causes adhesions, scar tissue, acts as a glue, sticks your organs together, causes irreversible organ damage. So it's quite a serious disease, and a lot of people don't really understand what it is or the symptoms of it. So sorry, that was a bit of a side note there. But yeah, they said the best chance is now. So Kev, being the man that he is, was like, I've got this.
And how old were you at this
actually,
point?
I was 21, 22, yeah. I think. And he was like, oh, I've got this. And that is exactly what he said to the doctor. And he laughed, thankfully. But we were really lucky. We did catch pregnant very, very quickly. Mm. And it was a really scary time because I remember ringing the doctors and telling them. And one of the first things a doctor ever said to me was, well, you'll be lucky to see it through 12 weeks.
Wow.
And I just thought, oh, congratulations. So yeah. Have a nice pregnancy. But obviously I've seen it through the 12 weeks. And then I got really poorly at 20 weeks. I had a kidney infection, which just sort of stayed with me till the end of the pregnancy then.
Yeah.
And I was in and out of hospital constantly. But she obviously is here. Hmm. She's 7 now. She's an absolute nutter.
Yeah. To be fair, what, 7 years?
Yeah. Yeah, we love her to bits. And we feel really lucky because after we had her, I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, we really wanted another baby because we never really had that conversation. But we were sort of trying in a way because
yeah.
I wasn't really taking anything. It just never happened. But it's fine. You know, I'm not really that bothered.
Yeah.
I feel lucky to have her. But after I had Sophia, everything sort of settled down for a little while. And I remember going back and forth to the doctors after about a year because it started to flare back up again.
Mm.
And again, it was just, you've got endometriosis, we know what it is, we're not going to refer you on. And I still didn't really know much about endometriosis.
Yeah.
I knew that if I had it removed, it would make it better. But trying to get to that point was really difficult. Then we ended up going into a lockdown and I just had no hope. But things just got worse and worse. I started to have, I don't know if this is a bit too much information, but I'll say it as it is, because
yeah.
that's what it's for. So I started to have rectal bleeds that were just really horrific.
Mm.
And
is that common with endo?
With bowel endometriosis, I believe,
yeah.
not endometriosis as a whole.
Mm.
It is common with bowel endometriosis, but not really endometriosis elsewhere.
Yeah.
I don't think, I'm not sure. But yeah, it wasn't very nice, and I kept going for, they kept referring me for colonoscopies, and they couldn't find anything, which is obviously a good thing.
Yeah.
But also for me, I'm thinking, well, where's this, I'm not making it up, there's blood coming
yeah.
from somewhere, and it's a lot of blood, and eventually they referred me to a gynecologist who basically said to me, your body is completely exhausted,
mm.
and you need a break, and they put me on Prostat. Am I waffling?
No.
So they put me on Prostat, which is an injection to shut your ovaries down.
Yeah.
And what that does is it stops your ovaries, I believe this is what it does, producing a hormone that feeds the endometriosis, which then obviously makes your endometriosis settle down.
So is that basically putting you into premenopause?
Yeah, chemical menopause,
yeah.
reversible menopause though. So as soon as I stop taking the injection, my ovaries will start slowly waking back up.
Yeah.
Hopefully, some people's ovaries, they never sort of fully wake back up again, but
mm.
hopefully they will.
That's quite a nice way of putting it though, to be fair. Like, they're kind of just asleep.
Just asleep,
yeah.
yeah. They've just gone to sleep for a little while. Useless things. they really are. No, so they put me on that and it worked really well. They actually only license it for 6 months at a time because
mm.
it can thin your bone density.
Okay.
So you've got to be really careful when you're on it. But obviously it comes with a lot of side effects, hot flushes, night sweats, mood swings, the anxiety's been horrific.
Yeah.
More so the last few months. But I've been on it now for just over 2 years, I think. And it's just starting to get to a point where it's not as effective anymore.
Right, okay.
I'm just getting a lot of breakthrough pain. And the last sort of year, I've had a lot of bladder symptoms as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a year ago, they investigated my bladder and they think I've got urinary retention, but they're not 100% sure why at the moment.
Yeah.
I struggled to completely empty my bladder. I did have an operation a few weeks ago and they found endometriosis around my bladder, but unfortunately it wasn't an operation to remove it. It was
yeah.
more just to diagnose it. He's not trained in doing that, unfortunately. And then he also did an MRI which shown a large piece of endometriosis on my rectum.
Yeah. Which explain.
Yeah, they think has basically infiltrated into my rectum. So my uterus has stuck itself to my bowel, basically. Mm. And it's just causing a hole.
A whole heap of surprises.
Bad stuff that's going on. But yeah, so that's basically where we're at the moment. I'm waiting for an appointment to see a surgeon in May about the endometriosis, and hopefully that'll finally remove it, because it was the urologist that said to me, you were 14 when this was first mentioned to you. You are now 31.
You've lived with it long enough.
You've had no adequate endometriosis surgery, and you've got to a point now where you're basically facing invasive surgery, and you don't really know what you're going to wake up with when you wake up from that operation. So,
From what I've read and what I've understood and learnt about sort of endometriosis and surgeries and stuff, from what I gather, you kind of go down the route of you have a hysterectomy. You either have like a partial hysterectomy, or you can have the full shebang.
Yeah, the full show.
Yeah. If that is the case, do you know what the risk element is of endometriosis coming back? Does it still sit and live within you?
Yeah, so I don't really know the full answer to that, but I think my understanding of it is, once you've got endometriosis, you've got it basically, and they can remove it, but they can't cure it. So it grows back, and I think, I could be wrong, but I think it goes back where it was. It's almost like they can't get to the root of it.
Yeah.
So having a hysterectomy, it doesn't cure it, and I don't really understand why, because sometimes you're taking the ovaries away, which if you've taken them away, you think, well, surely
where's it grown from?
But it does, and that's what I think they don't understand, and that's why there's so, obviously it's March at the moment, it's Endometriosis Action Month, and we're trying to raise as much awareness as possible, because it's not researched enough, and it's not funded enough, unfortunately. Mm. And if it was, we might be able to cut diagnosis time down. It takes on average 8 years to be diagnosed with endometriosis. Yeah, 8 years. By which point, it's had 8 years to just manifest
and grow
and grow
and put deep roots in.
Yeah, and get worse and worse and worse.
So obviously, if you have, most women have to go for a smear test at certain ages and stuff. Is there currently any testing that can be done for endo, or is it only if you show symptoms?
It's only really if you show symptoms. So there's only a few ways that they can diagnose endometriosis, but they say the best and most effective way is through a laparoscopy surgery, which is basically they'll put a little camera in and have a little look around, and they can physically see it. So when you have an MRI, again, my understanding and how it's been explained to me is that endometriosis will only show up on an MRI if it's a significant piece and if it's sort of infiltrated into organs.
Yeah.
Superficial endometriosis, which is endometriosis that's sort of over organs, won't show up, which is just really, I don't
that's
understand
bizarre.
How it works, but it won't show up. So you could be you could have an MRI and you could be completely covered in it, but because it hasn't grown into an organ, they'll misdiagnose you and say there's nothing wrong. There's absolutely nothing wrong. So I would advise anyone that's listening that has had an MRI to try and diagnose endometriosis. If they haven't seen it, it doesn't rule out that you haven't got it. You might still be completely covered in endometriosis, but they can't see it on an MRI. And I know some doctors are trained in seeing it on ultrasounds, doing internal ultrasounds and looking at the kidneys and things like that. They are really clever and they're really trained in seeing it, but again, it doesn't really give you a full picture. The true way of sort of diagnosing exactly where endometriosis is through that camera. That's what we need to be pushing for.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's no real, you can't really screen.
Yeah.
Every girl as they get to a certain age with a laparoscopy surgery. So it is about, keeping a diary and just being really, really persistent with your doctor and. You know your own body, when something's right, and don't let it get to a point where you're like, me now, like, however many years down the line. Oh, it's a mess, but never mind.
So what are girls looking for? Like, what are the signs and symptoms of endometriosis?
So the first sign is heavy periods, heavy, painful periods. Your periods shouldn't be excruciating. They shouldn't leave you passing out on the bathroom floor, sickness, nausea, all of that is not normal.
Yeah.
I cannot stress that enough. Your period should not be an inconvenience. It should just be a part of being a woman and just, you know, going through that cycle. It shouldn't inconvenience you in any way. You won't speak to one woman that doesn't say that period isn't an inconvenience,
but it shouldn't change.
No. Like,
your entire lifestyle a week or two or however long.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is.
For me, I found that my periods lasted longer than what was normal, considered normal anyway. So I think typically a period is like 5 to 7 days, but mine would always push to like the 10, 11, sometimes even 12 days. And they were just really heavy, really painful. And the pain would sort of like radiate, like it was beating my belly, my back, but it would go all down my legs as well. And it's like having period pain in your leg, it's horrific.
Yeah.
Then that would affect my ability to walk. Also look out for things like painkillers, so like paracetamol, ibuprofen, not touching the pain. That should help your period pain. If you're thinking I need something stronger, then that's a bit of a warning sign as well. Painful sex is another big one. But also pain that sort of like crops up throughout the month as well. So any sort of pelvic pain that's sort of unexplained, that's a massive indicator as well.
Okay.
And then if you've got sort of bowel endometriosis, then you'll be looking at things like rectal bleeding when you're on your period, or just at any point throughout the month. Pain when you're opening your bowels, constipation, diarrhoea, just sort of going fixed.
So you're literally buggered from both sides.
Yeah.
You're either bunged up or
too
loose.
And then bladder endometriosis, for me, has presented as sort of like urinary retention, not being able to completely empty my blood out, recurrent water infections, and just general real discomfort in that area, like just like a heavy sort of, just like something's not working properly, and I can't really put my finger on it. And then you can get like thoracic endometriosis as well, which I don't really know much about, but I think it's important to talk about because this might have happened to somebody and they're actually thinking, that's me, like chest pain on your period and shoulder tip pain. It's all symptoms of this like thoracic endometriosis. It can cause collapsing lungs and all sorts. It's gone as far as the brain, so they found endometriosis in the brain before, it's not just a disease associated with your periods, although it sort of is. It doesn't just affect you when you're on your period. When it's advanced, it can
spread like wildfire.
Yeah, ruin your life.
Yeah.
No, it hasn't.
Shit.
Yeah, it's quite bad. Yeah, and that's what I think people don't actually understand.
Yeah.
Is how much it can affect you.
Mm.
And then it's not just physical either. Like it's mental as well. It has this huge mental toll, and even on relationships. I mean, I'm lucky, like Kev's really understanding, but you know, like painful sex is just a no-go. Like, I will not put myself through that because it's too painful for a start, but it will also make me be in pain for days after as well.
Yeah.
And then there's bleeding and I just think, well, no,
it's
one's enjoying
it.
This
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's not worth it. And I'm really lucky that Kev understands that, but some women don't have that support. And I do, and I'm really, really lucky. He's been great. I probably wouldn't be where I am without him, so that's...
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Shows you it's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes.
So for anyone listening, there are good men out there.
Yeah. No, he's really good. But it does have a massive mental toll. And sometimes, like, with the anxiety of the process, it just comes on out of nowhere, and I'm like...
Where's that just...
wake me up at night. If I wake up, if I have a hot flush, I'll suddenly start thinking, is Fia's hairdryer plugged into the wall? Because if it is, what if the switch comes on and then it burns the house down? And it's just
before you know, you had this whole scenario.
Yeah, and I'm getting up and like checking to make sure it's off, or I'll get into bed and I'll know full well I've switched off down here, like all the candles and everything. But then I think, what if I've just left one candle on?
Yeah.
And I find myself getting out of bed, and I've done it before as well, where I'm too scared to come downstairs, so I've woke Kev up.
can you check if the house is on fire?
And he walks down and he's like, "Yeah, you do my head." Like, really out of it, like sleepwalking down here. But yeah, it's hard. It's really difficult. But I have to sort of look at the positives, and at the moment for me, the positives are that I do feel like I'm finally on the right track, and seeing a surgeon in May who is a specialist, which is also really important. So I don't want to offend anyone,
okay,
but general gynecologists are not endometriosis specialists.
Yeah,
that's not downplaying at all what they know, because there are some really amazing gynecologists out there, but they don't know enough about endometriosis to be able to adequately treat it. My gynecologist at Coventry actually said to me the last time I seen them, "I don't do endometriosis surgery." And I actually thought, well, why are you talking to me? Like, why have you given me an injection for the last 2 years, knowing full well that you're going to have to take me off it eventually, and then do what with me? Like, just leave me to sort of keep growing these cysts and adhesions. It's just not right. And they took one look at the scan that the urologist called for of the bowel, and she just said, out of our hands, like, we can't do anything for you here, we need to refer you on. So I'm seeing Dr. Martin Hirsch in Oxford, and I can't wait. Yeah, he seems brilliant.
Big up to Dr. Martin Hirsch.
Yeah, he's on Instagram. So actually, anyone that is on Instagram, let me get his name. He talks a lot on there about endometriosis, like every single day. It's endometriosis.surgeon.uk. he's been a bit of a lifesaver for the past few weeks, because I've actually really struggled to come to terms with the bowel endometriosis and how bad that it sort of got. I was told it was on my bowel years ago, but I didn't understand, and I just thought it, I don't know what I thought, I just didn't really understand the severity of it. And I think it's only now that it's got to where it is that I don't know the way out, unfortunately, and I don't know what the surgery is going to be. I don't know whether they're going to be able to just shave it away. I don't know whether they're going to have to take part of my bowel away. I don't know if I'm going to wake up with a bag. I don't know if they're going to be able to reverse that process.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of uncertainty, but at the same time, I'm trying to look at it as a positive that this is all I've ever wanted, is somebody to actually validate my pain and say, no, there's a reason why you feel like this, and we can fix it. And I do feel like I'm on that path at the moment.
Yeah, it definitely sounds it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think as long as you're mentally prepared for every case
scenario,
then I think you kind of can't be, obviously you can be upset, disappointed, or, you know, you can feel however you want to feel, like that's perfectly okay.
Yeah.
But I think if, you know, you go into it with whatever the outcome is, I'm going to come out effectively feeling better.
Then,
than before you went in.
Yeah, hopefully that's the aim. Anyway, no. I'm positive.
No, it
yeah.
it should be fine.
I have to weigh up as well. Like, sometimes surgery isn't always the answer, and that's something that I'm trying to sort of get into my head as well. But I also don't think leaving it there is the answer.
No.
So
what's the risk of leaving it?
It will just keep growing. It will just keep growing and growing and growing, and I believe as well, when you've got endometriosis, your risk of developing a hormonal based cancer is a lot higher.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, so I want it removed because I think that's what's going to be more beneficial for me. I don't want to be on tablets for the rest of my life. You know, like I said at the start, that I use crystals and I use Reiki and all sorts like that to help me, but unfortunately, I am at a point where it's not helping anymore.
Yeah.
And that doesn't disregard like what I do for work. It's just that I'm at a point where I do need a medical intervention now, and it needs to happen. And I am taking painkillers quite a lot. Obviously I'm on this injection. oh, I don't want to do that forever. Like, yeah.
It's not a way of life.
No, not at all. Not heavy painkillers that leave you pretty comatose. Am I allowed to swear? Was that swear?
No, you can swear.
Oh, okay. Oh, my God.
Can you imagine me like, oh, my God, no, you can't swear.
It wasn't even a bad swear word.
No, I know. I'm quite surprised, to be fair. It's been
quite
tame in that respect, yeah.
I'm trying to say my language is impeccable.
I mean, meek.
I don't swear at all. I'm just at a point where... And I think it takes a lot for someone that is in this sort of line of work, so a healer, I don't know, like, would prefer to choose a natural way of life, to actually say, no, like,
I need some more help here.
And I would never, and no good healer would ever say to you, you don't need medical help, because we are not above the medical medicine at all.
Yeah.
We are purely complementary. We help alongside medical treatment where it's needed. You know, I can't cure anyone, and I don't claim to be able to do that, and I certainly can't cure myself.
Clearly, yeah.
Because it's a shame, but I can't, unfortunately. I'm on the right path, and that's all that really matters, and that's what I'm holding on to. But it is hard. It's very hard.
Yeah, it is, and we spoke about chronic fatigue.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you suffer with it.
Yeah.
It's so hard to try and get people to
understand.
Because it's like, oh, just go have a coffee, that'll wake you up.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm on my ninth coffee. I'm still knackered.
I've had 12 hours sleep. I've taken a sleeping tablet and I'm still awake.
Yeah.
It's horrible. It's sort of like being hit with, I don't know, like you're like hit with a bus, and you know you're tired. And I don't know about you, but I really struggle with sleep as well, so that doesn't help. And I sleep a lot more in the day than what I do at night,
because
that's when I find I can switch off a bit better. I don't know why, my anxiety just seems a little bit better throughout the day than it does at night. But chronic fatigue is just something that sleep can't cure.
Yeah.
Coffee can't cure it, sleep can't cure it. Nothing but sleep
can
cure it, but even that don't work. So it's just... I don't know. I don't even know what it is, or how. Is it just your body being so run down? I don't know.
Yeah, it's
like
just
fighting constantly.
Yeah, and that's what you just.
You're just
exuding.
Like,
is that the word I want? Yeah, you're just, you know, expending that much energy
all the time,
constantly fighting whatever's going on inside.
Yeah.
That eventually you're just going to be like, fuck.
I'm just so tired.
Yeah.
Yeah, chronic fatigue is not.
So. So I'm doing my own little bit of research on myself, on my own sort of fatigue levels.
Yeah.
So one of the things, my sleep, like, I'm parking that at the minute, because that is what it is. That's not going to improve short term.
Yeah.
But specifically looking at more of my diet.
Yeah.
So context for people that do listen. I have PSC, primary sclerosing cholangitis. That took me so long to learn.
I thought endometriosis was bad. Like, some people struggle saying that. Like endometriosis.
Yeah, but why?
What did you just say? PSC.
So
PSC.
Primary sclerosing cholangitis.
Clarits.
Not clit. Cholangitis.
Cholangitis.
Yeah.
Okay, that is a mouthful.
Yeah.
They don't make it easy, do they?
No, and this is it. And I love things that are ironic. So this is way off topic. But the word dyslexic, excuse me, the word dyslexic is one of the hardest words to spell. People with dyslexia cannot fucking spell.
Oh,
it's
geez,
like, why?
No.
Why not? Why?
Yeah.
So yeah, obviously I have that. So in a nutshell, PSC, well, for me, my liver ducts have pretty much fully narrowed and closed, so my liver effectively is slowly shutting down. So that comes with its own cycle of opportunities. And yeah, obviously fatigue is one of them. Now, I can't really digest fats, whether that be deemed as good fats or bad fats. My body just
can't
cope with it. hence why I may have put a little bit of timber on. But it's fine, we're comfortable. I'll be classed as jolly.
Jolly.
So for me, I'm now trying to work through my own nutrition, my own food, and having smaller meals, but more frequent. I'm only kind of 2 weeks into it.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see a positive trend.
Yeah.
And then we hit the weekend. And it all goes south.
It's a weekend though.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Like, it's so hard. Because diet plays a massive part with endometriosis. I think it just with all chronic illness.
But it's one of the things that I think that's unfortunately one of the last things that gets looked at.
Absolutely, yeah, of course, definitely. I don't think I've ever had a doctor say to me, have you considered changing your diet for endometriosis, which is really bad. But again, it's because it's so under-researched.
Yeah.
But luckily, I do my own research, and I know quite a lot of girls in the endo community, and you know, we refer to each other as endo sisters, and
love that.
Yeah, it's so cute, and we are like, it is like that. Like, you know, there's no one that understands what you're going through better than someone who's going through what you're going through, and that is so true. And I've learned that a vegan diet and no gluten massively helps my endometriosis and my fatigue levels, but it's not sustainable.
No.
I'm not going to sit here and say I'm never going to eat meat or dairy or gluten again, because I am.
Yeah, yeah.
And I haven't today. I had a banana today and a peppermint tea, so I've done well, but...
Wait, that's all you had?
Yeah.
It's nearly 11 o'clock.
I know, but this is another thing. Like, my belly just doesn't do well with food at the moment at all, which is not a great thing.
It's not great when you want to live.
No, so... I just like to eat little enough, a bit like you, but just smaller portions, really. But yeah, I don't know. I think I spoke to you about the medical medium diet. Did I speak to you about that?
Yes.
Yeah. So I done that for. I done the cleanse, but I didn't. I'm not going to sit here and say I'd done the full cleanse, because I got to about day 7 and I was like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
I'm miserable. I'm drinking cucumber juice. I'm eating smoothies, I'm not eating proper food, and it's just making me feel worse. And I did give it a good go, and there are things that I've took from it which I think is more important than actually sticking to a diet. And for me, like, I found it in a way not pointless, because I don't want to, like, the work and research that the medical medium guy, He's incredible, and he's had some absolutely amazing success stories, but unfortunately it's just not for me. And that's not a reflection on him, but, you know, I live in a house where I can't really eliminate all the toxins, because I've got a 7-year-old, and my husband, he don't buy into it, unfortunately. And I just thought, there's things I can do through my own diet to help myself, and I don't think I need to follow a really strict religious diet where I'm miserable and unhappy and not really, I felt like I wasn't fueling my body with what it needed. It's just not sustainable for me, but I do try my best 5 days a week to be vegan and try not to eat gluten. But then, like you, at the weekend it goes apart, and I don't really care. But then I suffer for it.
And that's it. Like, there's, I can't remember the saying, but it's basically like, you choose your suffering. So, for example, not last week, the week before, I was already uncomfortable and in pain. And then I decided to have some pick and mix. I can't just have a handful.
It's one of the worst.
I know. And I can't just have a small portion. Like, if you haven't pick and mix, you haven't pick and mix.
You're having a pick and mix,
And I woke up on the Monday, I was in agony. And it lasted pretty much all week. And then it kind of got to the weekend, and the pick and mix were looking at me again.
There they are.
And I'm like, no, I've got to break that cycle. And I'm so glad that I did. Because it's like, it's not healthy, it's not good. Yes, the intake of sugar is shit. For me specifically, I can't break that down. Why?
Why do I keep? And I think that's something from an outsider who hasn't got any sort of chronic illness looking in, they're probably listening and thinking, just don't, if it makes you worse, don't do it. But
yeah,
that's so hard. Like, you, it's dairy and meat and gluten are in absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And I suppose for you it's similar, like sugar and fats and stuff.
Yeah.
What
it's just
meant,
things that you don't even
you
think about.
Live
yeah.
Off? Like, I don't. And I do know girls that have like completely thrown themselves into that diet, and you know they're doing really well, but I also know they're not completely pain free. And I know like healing doesn't happen overnight and it's
yeah.
a long process, but for me it's just not, just doesn't work. And I guess like one thing I really want to get across is that's okay. Like
yeah.
just because you can't follow a diet doesn't mean that you're not suffering and you're not, you know, going through what you're going through. You absolutely are. It's okay to not want to follow a diet
yeah.
and, you know, be eat the food you want to eat and be happy. Like, yeah, you might suffer for it.
But again, it's choosing
it's,
that suffering.
It's down to yeah, it's
yeah.
down to the individual. Small changes I've found have really helped. So, like cutting out certain oils.
Cooking oils.
Yeah, cooking oils. Like just cooking in water mainly. And when I make like curries and chilies and stuff, it is all vegan, like really fresh veg. And rather than having all these different sauces, I make my own up with tomatoes and that has really helped. But again, sometimes it's not always sustainable when you're a mom
yeah.
working, and sometimes I do have to reach for the pasta, but I do make sure it's gluten free. so that's all you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, like you said, it's not sustainable, and I think, and these things take a long time, and I think that's why people kind of fall off the bandwagon a little bit, because whether or not people choose to admit it, we all get sucked into things like
yeah.
TikTok.
Oh my gosh,
where...
don't talk to me about Tom. Do not trigger me. No, I'm joking.
But you'll be on TikTok for 10 minutes, and before you know it, a month has passed.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And because our attention span has changed now,
yeah.
we are so used to having this quick dopamine fix.
Yeah. yeah.
We expect that to be the same with everything in life.
Yeah.
Like people, so like obviously for me in my industry, people want to get thinner, like
yeah.
you know, leaner, they want to get more muscle, this, that, and the other. But it's then you're trying to compete with social media influencers that like,
yeah.
do this workout for 6 weeks, eat this for 6 weeks, and you'll look like me. No.
No,
no, you will not. So you don't know anything about that
yeah.
person.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes my life
harder
because I have to put realistic expectations in with people and
absolutely.
Say...
Absolutely. Manage expectations.
Yeah. So I'm working with a woman at the moment who has had endometriosis. She's
yeah.
had a full hysterectomy. She's now obviously going through... her menopause
yeah.
so she's put on a significant amount of weight, and our whole process now is getting her to lead a healthier, balanced
yeah.
lifestyle. And I sort of, you know, said up front, this isn't going to be a 6 to 12 week thing and then
no.
you can go off on your own.
Of course it's not.
I said as a minimum we need to look at 6 months
yeah.
and you know I'm really grateful that she's fully committed to that
yeah,
and
yeah.
she's been really open and happy to record all of it and stuff.
That's brilliant.
Which is great.
It's really good. It's because she'll be probably, I imagine, I don't want to imagine how she's feeling, but it's quite a vulnerable position to put
yeah.
yourself in. And I know full well how hard menopause is, and like you do put weight on and it's not just putting it on, you're sure to lose it as
yeah.
well. And I don't know why that is. Like,
it's just
shit.
It comes down to a hormone imbalance.
Oh, it's just
It's shit, but from a...
Just my head in. Like, as if we don't have enough to contend with.
I say this all the time to my wife, to
yeah.
Tony. So I say, you know, girls growing up, you have to have, obviously, the physical changes. Obviously,
yeah.
you start to develop.
Yeah.
You might get sparse.
Yeah.
You have your period.
Yeah. And that's always fun.
Yeah. And then you'll have a baby. So not only are you
yeah.
carrying that child, which comes with its own
yeah.
complications, you have to deliver that baby.
Yeah, and then your body's never the same.
Yeah, and then obviously then you come to the later end of that cycle, as it were, then you hit your menopause. It's like, at what point does that shit stop?
No, you don't.
Do you know what I mean? And yeah. And obviously I can't look at it from a female's perspective because I'm not a female, but men have it easy. Like, we have it easy. In comparison, don't get me wrong, we have our struggles like everyone else.
Yeah.
But in terms of how our bodies change, we kind of do.
Yeah.
You know, that, I'm not sort of downplaying any like mental health side of things because obviously I'm
stupidly
passionate about that side. But
in terms of what like, a woman has to go through just to be able to bring children into the world,
it's
mad. And it's
mental.
It is almost like a, for me, it is like a life sentence in a way.
It's a burden.
Yeah, when I was assigned female at birth, it was like, have endometriosis, and I didn't know that was going to get to where it has got, and unfortunately it is going to be with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
There are going to be times like now where it's bad, and I'm hoping it's reached a point where it's the worst it's ever going to get, and they're going to be able to manage it from now, but my point is it shouldn't have got to this point. It shouldn't have got here. And I do understand why I was turned away, especially throughout lockdown. But also that doesn't make it right, and I have a right to be angry about that, and I am angry about that, but what can I do? Like, it's got to where it's got, and that's that, unfortunately.
Yeah, but like you said earlier, you know, the positive is you're going to see the surgeon. There's some traction, there's movement, and it's not gone stagnant.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's like you said before as well, like, if something is off, shall we say, keep banging down that door.
Keep banging the drum at home. I can't stress that enough. With endometriosis, I was always told to keep a diary, and not just, you know, don't just keep a diary for a week. Do that diary for like 2-3 months.
Yeah.
And you'll start to notice like little patterns, like when your pain is getting worse, and it really helps them to get that final diagnosis.
Yeah.
And not only that, it helps you sort of realise, okay, last month I was feeling really anxious on this day, and I'm so many days post my period, and it's happened again. And it just, getting in tune with your own cycle is really, really healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously mine, I don't have one now. Mine's like, it's just a different ball game trying to get in tune with the menopause. I'm hoping to come off it soon, to be honest, because I don't see the point. It's not really working as well as what it should. Why am I on it?
But then obviously a lot of it's going to be dependent on how your surgery goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So with the diary,
yeah,
are you asked, and I want to sort of bring it back around to nutrition,
yeah,
are they encouraging you to track what you're eating as well? Because obviously what you're eating can, as we've said, can have an impact on.
So back then when I did mine, no. I was, I don't know, I was about 20, 21 when I did mine. It was before I got my diagnosis.
Yeah.
But no, there was no asking of like food or drink as well, because alcohol is I've noticed is a really bad one for.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's bad for my endometriosis, but definitely for anxiety. I notice my anxiety 100%. Is just ridiculous after drinking. But no, there was nothing on there about food. They might have asked, have you noticed, is there any food that's affecting? But honestly, anything I eat, because it's my bowel,
causes this. Yeah, but I mean, there'll be certain foods or food groups that you eat that will make it worse.
Yeah.
Like, obviously,
red meat's worse. Red meat and dairy, apparently.
Ah, nice. Yeah, apparently, is that because of what you've read or what you've experienced?
What I've read. And so I suppose cutting it out has helped, but like I say, I'm not at a point where I've completely cut it out, so I can't give a definite yes or no to whether that's what's causing the pain or not. Do you know what I mean? But they don't really, it was more just keep a diary, write down your symptoms, notice any
sort of changes or commonalities,
differences, similarities,
yeah,
and we'll go from there. And it does help them. But I don't know at what point it's going to take going to see a doctor and you just saying, here's my symptom diary, it's been 3 months, I've got really heavy painful periods. That should be the point that they say, okay, let's just refer you on.
Yeah.
And then at least you're on the right path, and then keep that diary going so that when you go, because it will be the first thing a consultant will say to you, go away and keep a diary. Well, if you can pull that out of your bag and say, yeah, well, actually, here's your diary.
Yeah.
And then they're sort of put on the spot then, and it's just push for that diagnosis, because you don't want it to get out of control. If they can cut the diagnosis time down, so if they can get that 8 years down, they can get endometriosis under control a lot quicker, and that is the key thing. If they can control it, it's not going to spread as much as what it would if it was like gone
fully.
Like,
Okay.
Wonderful.
So I'm going to look to wrap up, as it were. So, final words. What, you know, if you had to talk to your 14-year-old self and then your 21-year-old self, what message would you deliver? And for parents, I guess, because obviously you're now a parent, and if your little one starts to show signs, symptoms, because obviously as the end, it's not the end user, but you know, the person who is living with endometriosis, or I think they might be, that support work around them, you know, do you have any hints and tips or anything that you want to end this session on? That was such a long-winded way round of asking a simple question.
So definitely for parents with children, obviously girls, look out for really painful heavy periods. You know, if you find that your child is not wanting to go to school when they're on their period, then like listen to them, like please just listen to them. I had a really rubbish time at school with my periods, like being refused to go to the toilet and all sorts like that, and then obviously that causes embarrassment. Just listen to them and know that something's not quite right, and maybe just get them to start that process by writing a diary and writing down how they're feeling, because that's a good way of releasing anyway. I mean, I teach that with what I do, like writing down what you're feeling. And you don't have to be like, dear diary. Like, just literally write the day and write what you're feeling, paint like your symptoms, how your mental health is, and then move on to the next day. But just, I suppose, as well, for anyone else that's sort of maybe going through a diagnosis or who thinks they might have endometriosis, then just keep banging that drum. Like, you've got to keep advocating for yourself, because no one else is going to do it. You've got to keep fighting for it. Heavy, painful periods, painful sex, and then if you do find that you are having other symptoms as well, like recurrent water infections and they can't find a reason, or you know, you're having rectal bleeding and there's no obvious cause, then write all that down and go back to your GP and say, you know, like, I've spoke to someone and they have endometriosis, could it be possible? There's no harm in actually saying to your doctor,
do you think it's this?
I think it could be that, like, you know, there's no harm in doing that. But yeah, just keep checking those symptoms and don't ignore anything that's out of the ordinary. And if it's been 8 years, then
something really needs to be checked on.
Or even worse, if it's been, what have I been now? Like, what's 15, 16
years,
it's just not acceptable.
No.
But luckily, I am quite understanding.
Yeah.
And it's more my family that are frustrated about it all rather than me. Like, I kind of am understanding of like where the NHS is, it's in a right mess, and everyone else around me is like, it's not fair. And no, it's not, but.
But life isn't at times.
Yeah. No, it's not. So yeah, keep banging the drum, look out for those signs and symptoms, and just go and see your doctor, and just keep going, keep harassing your doctor. That's what I did. I rang him up one day and said, I'm tired. And he went, I know you're tired. He said, but there's nothing I can do. We're in the middle of a pandemic. And I was like, you've got to do something.
Yeah.
And he, that, it was from that point then that he was like, right, I'm going to refer you because you have rang up how many times now. And yeah, I don't know. I think sometimes it's luck of the draw who you get with your doctor. Unfortunately,
yeah. But like you said, keep banging on that
drum. Keep banging the drum. Yeah, definitely.
And then, just before we do cut off, where can people find you? Because the work you do is absolutely amazing. So I've had
great. About my address.
So I live here.
Oh my god.
So So yeah, so I've had Reiki from you. Yeah. I've had massage from you and stuff before.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
Again, I'm very open-minded.
Yeah.
Not everyone is, and that's fine.
No. I'd never force healing on it.
No. But yeah, I think, like I said, the work you do is amazing. Yeah. So more people should come and experience it.
Yeah.
So where, in terms of, where can people contact you?
At Herbal Soul Holistic on Instagram. That's the best place to kind of, that's where I put everything up there. Yeah, work's my purpose. Like, work makes me feel like I'm doing something, I'm giving something back to like the chronic illness community, I suppose. So yeah, at Herbal Soul Holistic, Reiki, massage, facials, all sorts of.
So a huge thank you to Beck for sharing her story on endometriosis. And thank you so, so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, as I said in the introduction, don't be scared. Throw it out on your Instagram. Tag me in it. Check out the show notes for all of my details. And of course, Beck's details. With that all in mind, enjoy the rest of your day, your week, your weekend. Just enjoy it. Take care, and I'll see you soon.